Hello again, and welcome to The Global Exchange, part of the Canadian Global Affairs Institute's podcast network. I'm your host and Vice President of the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, Colin Robertson. On this episode, we talk about Mexico, a year into the administration of President Andrés Manuel López Obrador. As listeners will recall, elections last year gave the AMLO movement not just the presidency, but houses of the Mexican legislature, as well as power in a host of states, governorships, and legislatures. To help us understand what is happening under AMLO, I welcome my friend Andrés Rosenthal. A career Foreign Service officer, Andrés served as Mexico's ambassador to Sweden and the United Kingdom and as deputy foreign minister. He is the founding president of the Mexican Council of Foreign Relations. He holds the lifetime rank of eminent ambassador of Mexico, and he now serves on boards and advisory councils, including Canada's Center for International Governance Innovation. Some context for listeners. President López Obrador campaigned as a populist, unbeholden to the traditional political parties, and after a year, public opinion polls, certainly one important measure, give him a high rating. But he has faced a bumpy year as president with migration challenges, trade negotiations, a slowing economy, and rising levels of violence in the country. And of course, there's always Donald Trump. Andrés, let's drill down into some of the policy sectors. But first, welcome, Andrés, to this program.
Thank you, Colin. It's a pleasure to be with you.
All right. On the economy, AMLO campaigned promising 4% growth annually. But as you and I discussed when we were most recently together in Guadalajara, it's nowhere near that level. Why not?
I think there are two factors that have led to a totally stagnant economy in Mexico. I think this year we will not grow more than 0%, so no growth at all. I think about 80% of that is due to measures that the first year of the AMLO government have taken, and perhaps 20% due to exogenous factors like a slowing economy in Europe, a slowing economy in China, uncertainties regarding what's happening in the United States and whether we are poised for a recession there. As you know, we have a very clear, just like Canada, dependence on the U.S. economy, so that contributes. But the great majority, I think, of the reasons why the Mexican economy is not going to grow this year have to do with uncertainty around AMLO, government positions, government policies, a rather chaotic and heterogeneous cabinet that doesn't make the decisions that are needed for investment and growth. And we have a very poor performance this year. And already looking into next year, into 2020, it looks like Mexico is not going to grow very much either. So I'd give Mr. López Obrador an F on economics.
Well, what is surprising then is that he's been able to maintain such high public support. Normally, when the economy doesn't do well, the person who gets blamed is the leader. But that doesn't appear to be the case. Why this long honeymoon?
Well, first of all, I think his support has declined from a very high 70s when he was elected down to the low 60s today. But I also think that it's important to realize that this is the first time in Mexico that we have a government from one of the parties left of center. And I think people in general want to give him the benefit of the doubt and give him the option to do something, even though the first year was not very promising, to do more in the second year and through the remaining 5 years of his presidency. As you remember, Mexico has a single six-year presidency with no re-election. So AMLO has another 5 years to prove that the three issues on which he campaigned and which he promised the Mexican people can be fulfilled. That is, economic growth. He talked about 4% initially, then went down to 2%. And as I said, it's now 0%. The issue of employment, job creation, reduction to violence and the activities of criminal organizations, and an end to corruption. And all of these have really not performed in his first year of government.
All right, let's go through some of those on a kind of social welfare state, which includes employment. As you say, he promised jobs, especially for youth. He promised infrastructure, although I noticed he canceled, although this was one of the promises, the planned new airport in Mexico City, and he also promised relief for the elderly. Is he at least succeeding? I don't know, the sort of the job creation, the infrastructure, and help for the elderly?
On some of those, yes. Certainly, the doubling of the pension that the state gives people above the age of 65 in Mexico is a reality. He has done that at a rather high cost, I might add. In the case of jobs for youth, there is a program for young people to go through internships in the private sector, but paid for by the state. That program took off at the beginning of this year, and perhaps several tens of thousands of young people were incorporated into these internships. But the money has run out for the program, and for next year, there doesn't seem to be any budget allocation for this to continue. So I think it was perhaps a one-shot thing. As far as infrastructure spending is concerned, that's the one area where the government has failed considerably. There is very little infrastructure spending. There was the cancellation of the airport, as you mentioned, and López Obrador wants to build a new airport, a new refinery, a new train to move people around the Yucatan Peninsula in the Mayan region. All of these are planned, but none of them really have yet taken off in terms of spending. Just a couple of weeks ago, together with the organized private sector, the president released a list of little over 140 infrastructure projects that, beginning next year, will presumably get funding, mainly from the private sector, but also partially from the government. So we'll have to see what happens. But this year, there has been almost no infrastructure spending at all. And that has contributed enormously to the fact that the economy hasn't grown at all. And this also, I think, relates to private sector investment, both in Mexico and from abroad. With the uncertainties around some of the legal issues relating to contracts that were already signed in the previous administration, in the energy reform, and in other parts of government commitments during the Peña Nieto administration, a lot of the private sector investment has, at least for the time being, dried up or been put on standby. And that also contributes to the very poor economic performance.
Now, certainly my recollection was that in the early years of the previous administration of President Peña Nieto, there had been significant economic reforms, the electricity sector, the energy sector, and education. Those reforms, some of which, when AMLO campaigned, he threatened to roll back. What's happened there? Because my impression was that the global economy had responded positively to a lot of what Peña Nieto had done, particularly as it related to economic and energy reform.
You're absolutely right, Colin, and that's one of the reasons why the economy hasn't grown this year. Most of the reforms that were adopted over the previous administration's time in government have either been put on hold or have been rolled back. The education reform, for example, has been totally rolled back. The energy reform, although not changed in terms of the constitution, where the private investment in the energy sector was brought into play for the first time in Mexico in many years, that hasn't been rolled back, but it hasn't proceeded either. So none of the private sector possibilities of investment in the oil and gas sector or in the electricity sector have taken place because administratively the new government has put all that on hold. There are other reforms that also I would say are probably at this particular point in time either frozen or moving very, very slowly. And I think that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why things haven't moved forward. In the case of the energy reform, it's particularly important because there were quite a few contracts that were signed during the Peña Nieto administration, with companies for exploration and exploitation of hydrocarbon resources, for building pipelines, oil and gas pipelines. And all of these have come to an abrupt halt. And there is even a questioning by the new government as to whether they will be allowed to continue. And that uncertainty has also contributed enormously to a freeze, if you like, on private sector investment, both Mexican and foreign, in the energy sector.
And I think worth pointing out that some of those companies, particularly in the energy sector you talked about, are Canadian. My recollection is TransAlta, TransCanada were involved in pipeline, and ATCO and others in provisions to the energy sector, which should be a strength for Mexico.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, it was a formal complaint by the Canadian government regarding a pipeline contract that was being reviewed by the new government. And eventually a negotiation took place and a resolution was found. But the uncertainties around these issues and to some extent the lack of rule of law in Mexico has contributed strongly to the fact that people from the private sector are looking elsewhere than Mexico at this particular point in time for investment opportunities.
Well, you mentioned rule of law, so let me move on to another one of the promises, which was to deal with crime and corruption. AMLO promised to address the problem, which of course has plagued Mexico for some time. I think back to the Calderon sort of war on terrorism, and it continued to bedevil, I think, certainly President Peña Nieto. And of course, sadly, we see certainly reported in the American media are events like the roadside killings of the Mennonites in northern Mexico, all of which doesn't help the image. Now, as president, AMLO has President López Obrador has nationalized the police force. I understand how is that fight against crime and corruption going?
It wasn't particularly a nationalization of the police force, Colin. What he did was he took the military components of the federal police, which constituted almost all of the federal police, and transformed them, gave them a new name, called them a National Guard, and passed a new law in Congress, creating this new force. However, it is, first of all, very new. It is still not up to the numbers that would be necessary for the fight against criminal activities and corruption. Good part of this National Guard was deployed to do Donald Trump's dirty work in terms of stopping migrants from Central America coming up through Mexico to get to the United States. So about half of them are deployed on the southern border and also on the border with the United States to keep migrants from getting to the U.S. And they are really, or have been until now, really quite ineffective in terms of any major operation or any major change on the issue of criminal activity in Mexico. We had the case of the son of El Chapo in Culiacán that this National Guard group tried to arrest because he took over from his father to lead one of the drug cartels. And the group that actually went to find him was very small. It didn't have adequate training. It didn't have adequate weaponry. It didn't have adequate backup. And so at the end of the day, the criminals managed to get him released with threats against the families of the soldiers and so on. So it isn't something that I would say so far has made even a slightest dent in the fight against organized crime. Now, as far as corruption is concerned, as you know, this was one of the major parts of López Obrador's campaign. He kept saying that he was going to end corruption, that because he wasn't corrupt, no one else was going to be corrupt. But the fact, again, belies the rhetoric of his promises. The fact is that aside from going against some of the government officials from the previous administration who have been accused of corruption, he has done absolutely nothing regarding anybody currently in office or currently in power to do anything against them. There are accusations against some of his cabinet about corruption, including the head of the Electricity Commission. But he always, when it's about his people or about him, he always says, oh no, those are fine. Those have nothing. This is fake news. Very much like Donald Trump. I mean, you know, the similarities between Donald Trump and Andrés Manuel López Obrador are enormous, because he feels that the conservatives, the people that came before him, are out to make sure that he fails in the promises he made. But if you take an objective view about all of these things, both the economy, the violence, we've had the highest number of homicides in this month of December, just in the first few days of December, than ever before. And there doesn't seem to be anything that is stopping criminals from doing what they're doing.
That's certainly, unfortunately, the image which comes across often through American networks is, and we did see that famous video with El Chapo's son sort of going away from the police and escaping. But, you know, just as a kind of caution to listeners, there's still 2 million Canadians a year go down, especially at this time of year, to enjoy Mexico. I've just come from being in Guadalajara in Mexico City. You know, I've never felt insecure. And so I guess what we don't want to do is frighten some of the Canadians to think, I mean, is it fair to say that this is mostly localized in certain areas? And, you know, it's like any place in the world, you've got to be careful where you go. But isn't it fair to say that, you know, it is still a very safe place and a wonderful country for Canadians to go and visit, especially this time of year?
There's no doubt that that's the case, Colin. We receive millions of Canadian visitors, many more millions of Americans. The number of incidents that involve foreigners in any criminal issue in Mexico is very, very low. I don't think it's any higher than you would find if you went to Chicago or to some other cities. But yes, localized, definitely. Fights between and among some of the cartels that are fighting their jurisdictions in drug trafficking and things of that sort. But that is generally very localized. It's generally in areas that are not normally tourist destinations. So I would say that it is perfectly safe to travel to Mexico and to enjoy our sun, especially when it gets cold in Canada, and to enjoy our beaches and the archaeological sites and so on. So this is nothing really against the foreigners. And I would think that in general, there is no reason for anyone to be afraid of coming to Mexico.
And as you pointed out to me and reminded me when we were in Guadalajara, it's the home of tequila. And I can certainly vouch for tequila, which is having been at a testing at your very good ambassadors in Canada, is that it is has as varied tastes as does whiskey from Scotland. So, and I know that's a popular, certainly pastime, because when I got on the airplane in Mexico City to come back to Canada, I think almost everybody but myself was carrying with them a bottle of tequila, different types. So that's been a successful part of the marketing on Mexico's part as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, tequila is one part of this, but also Mexican food, which is extremely popular outside of Mexico. More and more designs by Mexican indigenous populations, which are being used by international designers. A lot of things of Mexico you will find around the world. And the image that we want people to see and to look at is, of course, of a very peaceful and interesting country to visit for whatever reason people come here. I mean, most Canadians, I think, come here for the weather in the winter. But the fact is that many Canadians live in Mexico, in Mexico City, in Puerto Vallarta, in San Miguel Allende, and they are perfectly happy, and we welcome them with open arms.
And as you point out, deep culture, certainly that was my impression from being in Guadalajara, which I think, as you pointed out to me, is the biggest book festival in the world outside of Frankfurt. And certainly walking through and seeing all the young families and people. It was extremely impressive. It was like going to a sort of carnival in Canada, but it was all revolving around books and authors and things. It couldn't help but be impressed. And I know you've attended many of the sessions there, that because it's what, in its 30th year or something in Guadalajara?
It's 33rd year. And yes, it is after Frankfurt in terms of attendance, number two in the world. Last year, 800,000 people attended the book fair in Guadalajara. And I would suspect from what I saw that this year that figure is going to grow considerably. Families, there's a part that's dedicated to children's books and young people's literature. Almost all of the editors and publishers from around the world exhibit and sell their books there. And of course, there are side panels and interesting discussions of current affairs, like the one that you and I were involved in about the future of North America. So it's one of the very important attractions in this time of the year at Guadalajara. But there are so many other things to see in Mexico and to do that, you know, repeated visits, I think, are very important. And I hope that you yourself and others will come again and see other parts of Mexico.
You can be sure of that. All right, let's move to an area of which you have devoted your career to and of which I've learned much from you, and that's foreign policy. It is obvious, as with Canada, Mexico has to focus on Donald Trump and the United States, because as you point out, like Canada, the United States is the biggest market for Mexico. I think around 80% of Mexican exports go to the United States and about 75% of Canadian exports go to the United States. So it is our most important partner, and we have shared in the ups and downs and the unpredictability of the Trump administration. Although specifically for Mexico, there has been, of course, the migrant movement and Donald Trump's promises around the wall. Meanwhile, the neighborhood is undergoing changes. You think of Venezuela, I look at Chile, Argentina, Bolivia. Do you want to give us a sense of what's going on and how you would assess and define AMLO's foreign policy to date? There's kind of two questions there. What's going on as an experienced ambassador? And then secondly, the AMLO foreign policy.
Well, what's going on is, I think, a manifestation very similar to those that you see in other parts of the world, in Asia, in Hong Kong, in Iran, in Iraq, in France, of a population that is fundamentally fed up with a lot of the establishment and politicians and political elites that have run their countries and the governments of those countries over the last years. You see it obviously in Latin America with the demonstrations in Chile, in Colombia, in Bolivia, in Ecuador, not in Mexico and not in Brazil or Argentina. And I think mainly that's because these three countries had elections recently. And those elections were, to some extent, the safety valve that took people who were dissatisfied with the existing order of things to elect new and untried leaders. So Bolsonaro in Brazil, back to a Peronist government in Argentina, and López Obrador in Mexico. But around the world, it's clear that there is enormous dissatisfaction with the existing order. And that dissatisfaction in many places, including in many places in Latin America, has been manifested with big demonstrations, in some cases violent demonstrations, against governments and against the elites that run the countries. That's the neighborhood in terms of Latin America. In terms of Mexico, yes, just like Canada, our main foreign policy priority is the relationship with the United States for two reasons. One, we share with Canada, which is this very high dependence, economic dependence on the U.S. for exports, for investment, for trade, etc. But there's another reason in the case of Mexico that is not as shared with Canada, which is the fact that we have 20 million Mexicans who live in the United States and who travel to the United States either as tourists or for business or as migrant undocumented workers. And so therefore, it's extremely important that the U.S.-Mexico relationship is given priority in our foreign policy. I myself was Deputy Foreign Minister for North American Affairs, dealing with the U.S. and Canada during the Salinas administration in the 1980s. So we, again, even in this left-of-center government that Mexico currently has, AMLO has made it a point to try to get along with Donald Trump and the U.S. administration, try to do many of the things that the U.S. has tried to impose on Mexico, mainly on the migration of Central Americans through Mexico to the United States, as I mentioned earlier, by deploying the National Guard to do that, by allowing the U.S. to implement a Remain in Mexico program where they push all of the Central Americans and others who want to come to the United States and claim asylum to return to Mexico while they wait for their hearings and the adjudication of their asylum requests, which can in many cases take years. And then also on the trade issue, where has threatened Mexico with trade reprisals, with tariffs, and where the existing NAFTA agreement that worked as so well for the three of us, for U.S., Mexico, and Canada, for the last 20 years, he called the worst agreement that had ever been negotiated by the United States and forced us and you in Canada to renegotiate something, which is still not in force because he hasn't been able to get it through his Congress. So all of that is very much part of Mexico's foreign policy. Now, what perhaps I would criticize in the case of this government in Mexico is that it has been almost exclusively focused on the United States, whereas in the past, I think our foreign policy has been, for many reasons, including that overdependence on the U.S., has been focused on other parts of the world, the multilateral organizations, climate change, issues relating to disarmament, issues relating to our relationships with the European Union and with other countries in Latin America. All that has sort of fallen by the wayside with this huge concentration of effort and the resource on the relationship with the United States, which I don't think is healthy.
No, and I think probably shared. Okay, that has been the criticism of the Trudeau government in its first term was, since Donald Trump's election, the focus in terms of foreign policy was very much on the United States because, bluntly, for both of us, it is existential. And as we both recognize, our primary economic relationship that we have to get right. We now have a new government, which has took office, and yesterday we've just had our throne speech. What advice would you have for Canada's government in dealing with Mexico and with the Americas? Because, again, I always think of Mexico as the as our entree into the rest of the hemisphere.
You know, it's an interesting question, Colin, because for many years I have been watching Canada's relationship with us here in Mexico and with other countries in the Americas. It took a while for Canada to shift partially its vision, its foreign policy vision, from the transatlantic relationship to a relationship with its southern neighbors. I think that there is always more that can be done. I think the relationship between Mexico and Canada, by the way, we just celebrated 70 years of the establishment of diplomatic relations between Canada and Mexico. There was a very nice ceremony here at the Canadian Embassy where, among others, I was honored with an award for my contribution to that bilateral relationship. But there's always more that can be done. And as your current Prime Minister's father pointed out, the elephant between us often makes it difficult for the Canadian-Mexican relationship to thrive and prosper, because we both have to look at our relationship bilaterally with the United States. And the United States likes to look at its relationships bilaterally rather than multilaterally. So notwithstanding the fact that we have a NAFTA in force today and a new CUSMAC that sometime, hopefully in the future, will be ratified by the Canadian Parliament and the U.S. Congress and will enter into force, there are many more things that can be done to enhance the Canadian-Mexican relationship. Things relating to education, student exchanges, energy cooperation, issues relating to climate change and environmental questions. So I think that the Trudeau government so far in its first term and hopefully in its now renewed term will be able to further address other issues that are not necessarily those that relate to our mutual relationship with the United States. And I really truly believe that we have so many things in common that we could be doing more. We could be working together on some of the regional issues that we have in the Americas, issues relating to Venezuela, to Cuba, to some of these demonstrations and dissatisfactions that have been expressed in the countries in our region, looking towards larger relationships on trade and investment. Canada is a very important investor in Mexico. We have many, many Canadian companies working in Mexico on a daily basis, but there's always room for more. And there's room for more Mexican companies to go to Canada, which we are constantly trying to promote. So all I could say is that I would never call it advice, but an opinion that the new government in Canada should, like the new government in Mexico, work to further enhance this wonderful relationship we have and make it an even stronger and more fruitful one.
Well, Andres, you've just amply demonstrated why you have been honored by Canada's ambassador in Mexico on behalf of the Canadian people and why we will always treasure, if not your advice, certainly your opinions. So I thank you, and I hope our government is paying attention. I'm delighted that our ambassador and his team have honored you appropriately and that they are consulting with you on a regular basis, as do I, because we value, as you put it, your opinions. My final question, and it relates to what we spent part of our time doing, what are you reading these days?
Well, I tend to read several books at the same time. So I am reading a novel written by a Mexican author who is a personal friend of mine, Valeria Luiselli, called Lost Children Archive, which is a book that has won a whole series of prizes, including American Book Prize, a lot of things. She's also been awarded a MacArthur Fellowship. And it's a story of her insertion into the issue of children who cross the border between Mexico and the United States, some of them on their own and some of them with their families and the trials and tribulations that they go through. I'm also reading Yung Chan's latest novel. You'll remember her from her first book called Wild Swans.
Yes, I do. I read that. Yes.
Where she wrote about the Mao regime and so on. She's now written a book also which is called Red Girl, White Girl, Blue Girl. And it's a very interesting book about three young Chinese girls who in different ways grow up through this very dynamic new China. And finally, I am reading a book written by Santiago Levy, a Mexican economist who was the chief economist at the IMF until very recent, and then at the Inter-American Development Bank, which tries to explain why Mexico has not been able to grow. Goes back to some of the things you and I just discussed earlier in this podcast, where he addresses some of the social economic issues in Mexico that have limited Mexico's ability to grow. So that's what I'm reading.
That's a great smorgasbord for our listeners. Andres, thank you. And listeners, thanks for listening to this episode of The Global Exchange. We were joined today by Ambassador Andres Rosenthal. Remember, you can find the CGA Network on iTunes and Google Play. If you like the show, please remember to give us a rating on iTunes. You can also find the Canadian Global Affairs Institute on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. The Global Exchange is brought to you by our team at CJAI. Thanks go out to our producer, Jay Rankin, and to Drew Phillips for providing our music. I'm Colin Robertson. Thanks for joining us today on the Global Exchange.